This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. For more than 20 years, helping people look forward to their retirement years with confidence. And if you get a chance to rate our podcast on your provider, we'd appreciate you take the time to do that. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of InvestTalk. It is February 21st, 2017, and we're all about above-average investing for the average investor. We say that almost every day. I do, anyways. And we're I'm trying to help you learn to make better money decisions. And we're live. We're live right now, 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday. You can call anytime you want, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 888-99-CHART is our number. And we talk a lot about the need to save. I do. Save and invest. And it's a key to successful investing, saving money. Because you want to feed that investment with more and more cash as you every year, as you get older and older, just keep feeding it. Because you're going to need it when you no longer make that active cash. And I'll try not to be too preachy about, you know, saving money. But here are some interesting statistics. According to the Bureau of Economic Analysis, the average American spends 94% of their disposable income, and 43% of them, the average family, spends more than they earn. And what do I always say? Spend less than you earn. While 43% are not doing that. They're spending more. And there are people who save more. And of course, you have the outliers like Warren Buffett, you know. But we're just talking about, he can never spend the money that he earns. But save more than you earn. Not spend more, but too many people do. And also, here's an interesting comparison. Before 1944, during World War II, Americans saved roughly 26% of their annual earnings. And then after World War II, it was 10%. Okay? All up until Black Monday or so. When that happened, 6.5%. In 2007, they only saved 2.1%. Now, after the great big recession we had in 2008, 2009, savings went up to 6.2% now. How much do foreigners save right now? China saves 30%, Switzerland 14%, and Germans save 13%. So we are pretty low savers, we as a society. Not healthy. And I recently read 7-year auto loans are on the rise. Why is that? Well, one reason is the interest rates are very, very low. So 7-year auto loans aren't new, but with lower rates, they are enticing more people to take on longer debt. And the second reason, besides low rent rates, is that people are constantly looking for ways to afford what they can't really afford. You're buying more car, truck, whatever, than you can afford. So you're looking for ways to reduce the monthly payment. Well, while you're reducing that monthly payment, stretching out to 7-year loan, you're spending a lot more money on interest. A lot more. And I won't give you the stats. I have them right here. But about $1,200 more from a 4-year loan to a 7-year loan. About $1,200 more on a $25,000 loan amount. You're buying more than you can afford because you want it. You don't need it. You want it. And that's what I mean. You got to spend less than you earn. Spend less than, you know what? You can save the money up. And whatever you have saved up, that's what you can afford. No one does that anymore. Hardly anybody does that anymore. But that's, if you want to get wealthy, that's one of the ways you do it. Spend less you earn. Don't want to be an interest payer. Want to be an interest collector. Especially don't want to be interest payer on a depreciating item like a car or clothes or whatever. But maybe you can borrow on an appreciating item like a house or rental property, something that goes up in value. Now, what do you want to talk about? We can talk about anything that's on your mind, as long as it's financial. Let's go right to the listener line. We're ready for your questions, comments. 888-99-CHART is our number. So let's go to the phones and take this question from our 24-hour listener line.
Hello. This is Galen in South Carolina. Steve and Justin, I am enjoying the program a good bit. I've been listening in earnest for 3 or 4 months now, and I'm learning a great deal. I appreciated the discussion the other day about ETFs, and I was hoping you could go into a little bit more detail about what, if any, are the advantages of investing in an ETF rather than a regular mutual fund for someone like me, a long-term buy and hold investor. Thanks much. Take care.
Yes, if you're an ETF, exchange traded fund, is better than a mutual fund if you're buying indexes. Why? Well, there is a trade fee when you buy it, but if you're a long-term investor and you're buying the S&P 500, the annual fee of most ETFs is less than mutual funds. Remember, that's the only thing the cost there is after you buy it, is how much are they charging to hold all those, they holding that index. So you can buy an ETF, and many of those ETFs are cheaper than mutual funds. Expense ratio. An expense ratio, don't be misled. You have to pay for that expense every year, the expense ratio. Just like an ETF, they got to get paid too. But they are usually much cheaper. So that's your main benefit. Main one. There's also, we talked before, some detriments about ETFs too. And most of that really relates to ETFs that are using leverage, that don't really hold underlying stocks. They're much more risky. Or ETFs that don't have hardly any volume. And pretty, maybe ETFs that are kind of own more rare kind of positions or exotic positions, that kind of thing, is more dangerous. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We're going to go to Ellen in San Francisco. How you doing, Ellen?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Good. I listen to your show every day, all the time. I love you. You're awesome.
Thank you.
Nowhere else you could get the information that you give out. It's great.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm driving in the car. I'm sorry.
No problem.
A little distracted. I just went to the AAA and they had this sign and it said an annuity for 3.8% interest. And I was wondering if you thought annuity was a good idea.
And generally, the answer would be no.
An
annuity is an insurance product sold by an insurance company. And
yeah,
you might get 3.8%, but you're going to tie up your money for 7 to 10 years. Because leave it in an annuity.
Okay.
And there's two kinds of annuities. There's a fixed annuity and a variable annuity. And that sounds like a fixed annuity at 3.8%. Okay? But you got to remember, it's an insurance company that's taking your money. And they're usually pretty high costs as far as commissions and fees. And a lot of things are hidden from you. So in general, the answer would be no. Annuities are not a good way to go. I'd rather see you buy big blue chip dividend paying stocks like AT&T that pays 4 or 5%. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. Good to know.
Yeah,
all
they
right.
might go up and down in value, but long term they always come back and they pay you that dividend constantly and you make more money. So it's my preference.
Oh, okay.
It's a little bit more risky, but I don't like giving my money to an insurance company either. And I used to work for them.
Yeah, I don't blame. Oh, you did.
Yeah. Thanks, Alan. I appreciate the call.
I know you're so knowledgeable. You know everything. I just come up with questions. I have no one to ask.
I don't know everything. I don't. If you ask my wife,
she's so informed. I mean, that's why I listen to the radio to get the information. Anyway,
well, I really thank you for that. Thank you for the kind words. Okay, 888. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, everybody. Remember, when it comes to investing, nothing will pay off more than educating yourself. I want you to educate yourself. I really do. You can do it. You can learn to manage your own money. You don't have to hire people like me if you don't want to. You just got to have the interest and the time. Also, if you want to educate yourself, you can go to my recommended books section on investtalk.com. A bunch of hand-picked books to help you learn more. It's right there on investtalk.com.
Hey, Steve and Justin. This is Dan in Chicago. Love the show. Just had a question about Kraft Heinz. I saw it was down more than 4% today. Down more than 1% after hours trading as well. I realize it's still expensive on a PE basis, but just wanted to see what you guys thought about maybe dipping my toes into the water on this thing right here. I noticed I watched Bristol Myers Squibb have similar action. previously, and it bounced back pretty big the next few days after the dip. So just wanted to get your take on this sort of philosophy of buying big sell-off like this, and your particular advice on this particular instance. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye.
Okay, this is Kraft Heinz Company, and you have to know the history. Remember on Friday they offered to buy Unilever, UL? Unilever spiked up by 10% or so. And everybody liked the deal because Kraft spiked up too. And then it gave back some of that today because the deal was off and Unilever fell. We owned Unilever in our managed account, but we sold it in two out of the three managed accounts it's in on Friday when it spiked up. We held it in the other one, Unilever. Kraft, KHC, everybody knows manufactured food products such as beverages, cheese, and all that kind of stuff. Everybody knows Kraft. They're making more money. Their sales are kind of flat. So they really would like, they wanted to spark sales by, you know, buying Unilever to give them a bigger company. And Unilever, you know, said no thank you. So the deal was off, but it may not be off forever. Now, should you buy it? You're right. It's expensive. It's expensive. It's a $94 stock, going to make $4.11 next year. And my personal opinion is I would not buy Kraft. I would not. I just don't think it's not got the horses to grow. The P.E. ratio is too high. And, you know, I just don't want to own it at this price. Now, mind you, Unilever is just as pricey, but it does pay a nice dividend. And there's some things that I like that Unilever has that Kraft does not. But that's a bunch of stuff that I'd have to go over in detail. But so, I wouldn't buy it at this point. It's just too expensive for me. You know, I wonder if they're going to go back after Unilever making a better offer, though. That's very possible. But if they make a better offer, would that be positive short-term for Kraft? I don't think so, necessarily. They'd have to put on more debt. Value investing can be a journey of learning, everybody. Ignorance removal and gradual wising up. I kind of like value investing. We, meaning KPB Financial, are value plus growth investors. I like value. What does it take to be a successful value investor? Remember we talked about different strategies and different ways to invest? Well, value investing is one of them. And that's going to be one of our talking points today. How to be a value investor. Also want to talk about, I received in the mail a prospectus from a company. I'm not going to name the company, but I want to go over the prospectus that nobody ever reads, and I'm going to go over why they don't read it. This prospectus came in two little booklets even, not just one, but two. We'll talk about that. And I got a tax quiz. I pulled out three questions of a tax quiz of 10 questions, and just to see how much, just test your knowledge a little bit. These are all things I've talked about on the show. And three reasons to skip the Snapchat IPO. It's coming out. Three reasons to skip it. You know, it's a huge IPO that's coming out. And I have some reasons why you should not even think about it. That's what we're going to discuss. The market was up 119 points on the Dow, 27 points on the NASDAQ, and 14 points on the S&P. Up today. Still in the rally mode. This is InvestTalk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time. You can check in right now at 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART. We're going to go talk to Art Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, I just wanted to see what you thought about Fitbit at this price, because I think it's like bottom for now.
Well, might have. I still don't like it, and I probably will never like it, Art, to be honest with you, unless management changes and they try to do something else. Remember, Fitbit, everybody, FIT is a symbol. It develops wearable, connected health and fitness trackers and mobile apps that wirelessly sync with its devices. Now, don't misunderstand me, Art. I think it's a great device. I do. I think it's the future. I do. I just don't know if it's going to be Fitbit. Fitbit is a $1.36 billion company, and they were the avant-garde of the wearable devices. But I have a feeling they're going to be the also-rans to somebody like Apple or Samsung or one of the other guys when they get around. When they want this business, they're going to crush Fitbit if they want it. Right now, Fitbit's not making any money. It's going to lose 8 cents a share this current fiscal year, which is actually 2016. And then 2017, they're going to lose 32 cents a share. They're going to lose money. And sales growth is still increasing, but the pace of growth has really slacked off sharply. And the stock, of course, has sold off sharply, down from $19 last year as a high down to $6. So, Art, yes, you might be right in that this looks like it's trying to put in a bottom here. I just think long-term, I don't have a lot of hope for them. That's all.
Okay.
Okay, Art?
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm looking at they're not big enough to fight off any stiff competition. And, you know, the device they have is neat. I kind of like it. But, I don't know. It's just, for me, it's difficult to believe that someone might not just snap them. This is not an area. See, I always try to figure out, is this going to be the winner long term? Is it? And this kind of reminds me of Garmin. Remember Garmin, the map producer? Big. They were first to the market. They had really great technology. And then all of a sudden, maps and everything else, Google Maps and on Apple, everywhere. And you don't need Garmin. Didn't need a Garmin anymore. Now Garmin is still around, but it's, you know, not much of a company anymore. I have a feeling that's the path Fitbit is on. Something has to change dramatically to change my mind on that. FIT is the symbol, everybody. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Okay, value investing. There's different levels of value investing. There's an article on our website, the 8 levels of value investing. Now, I don't want to go through 8 levels of value investing, but I want to just point out that there's different levels of knowledge of value investing. And a value investor understands, like, they've educated themselves, like reading books like The Intelligent Investor, Common Stocks and Uncommon Profits, both of which are on my website. You know, the value, what is a value stock? You know, what do I look for? It's not just a low PE ratio. It's not. It's nice that it's a low PE ratio, but that's not all there is about a value. It could be a high PE ratio because there's different value metrics than just price to earnings ratio. Then as you learn that, you become more knowledgeable, you deepen your understanding of what value investing, and there's different levels. This article goes through 8, as I said. And by the time you're at the highest level, you'll know the difference between the name of something and actually knowing something. The name, value investing, versus actually knowing what it is. People just know, value investing, oh, that's when you buy stuff cheap. No. That's wrong. Also, you understand the competency and the circle of competency. We're talking about management and how they manage the companies from a constantly growing point of view, and how they can fight off competition. Really understanding deeply what's going on with the company and how it works. You know the history and culture of business cycles, okay? You know the company's ecosystem of how it's run. And you understand the risks involved, maybe when other people don't understand or even think about the risks involved. Also, one important thing is you can tell if management is lying to you or not, because you understand what's really going on. Those are just some of the things about a value investing. It's kind of important, excuse me, to know the difference between a value investor and a growth investor, and what are you? What do you tend to be? What do you want to be? Because you really have to decide. You can be a growth investor, and you can be a growth investor and a value investor at the same time, but you have to understand what those are. And that's what you're doing. And do you? It's just not something you can learn overnight. I wish it was that easy. It's just not. We're at the halfway mark of this Tuesday Invest Talk, everybody. Let's hear your money question. Let's hear it right now. 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues next. First, Steve and Justin are very enthused about the new program that's being offered through KPP Financial. It's designed to activate your 401k. It's called Active 401k, and it enables employees to make smart choices in their employer's 401k plans. So if you're frustrated by your 401k performance and your limited time to do research, Active 401k might be just the solution for you. It gives you a way to maximize your account, and that may be just what you need. It ranks your current options within your current employer's plans, and then all you do is log in and make the changes online. And the program will tell you what to buy, what percentages, and what funds. This program is offered by invitation to KPP clients and a limited number of InvestTalk listeners. Again, it's called Active 401k. And if you'd like to see more about it, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Investments tab, and then look for Active 401k. On our next Invest Talk, the answer to the question, how many mutual funds should I have in my portfolio, is not just a number. How many funds to diversify your portfolio? That's one of the topics next time on Invest Talk. We hope you can join us.
Hi, this is David from Orlando. I have a question about GOGEO. I'm currently up 97%, and it seems like it just keeps going higher. I don't want to be greedy, so I feel like I need to at least sell some portion of my position. The dividends are so good, so that keeps me wanting to hang in there a bit as well. Just curious your take on GEO. It is less than 5% of my portfolio. Thank you, and I'll listen on your podcast.
Okay, well, I wouldn't worry about it too much because that was going to be one of my questions if I, you know, could answer. Ask is, well, how much has it grown of your portfolio? GEO, everybody, GEO Group, it's a REIT that owns and leases and manages correctional detention and reentry facilities and community-based youth services. So it's a private prison company. And remember, before the election, Hillary was going to get rid of these, and Obama didn't like them, and in the state of California, no one liked them, blah, 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 so they weren't doing so well. And then when Trump won, they started taking off, and this one has taken off. I have a rule of thumb that when one of my positions is doubled, I start considering taking profits, but I look at the valuations and see if it's overvalued. And based on GEO's earnings, they're going to make $2.94 this year, and then next year, $2.91. So they're not going to grow their earnings, but sales are growing sharply, 18-20% a quarter. But even based on $2.94, remember it's a $46 stock. So it's not, it's a what, 15 PE, 16? Now the 5-year average is 5 to 15, so it's approaching the top. But at 15, that's normal average long-term market PE, the S&P 500 PE. So it's not like a screaming overvalued. It might be a little bit pricey, but what you could do is follow it up with a stop. As long as it's going up, you hang into it. If it falls a certain percentage, you sell back half. Kind of what I would do, because it's not so overly priced that it scares me. Now, if the PE was 30, some is a record high PE, then, I'd be more interested in taking some off the top here, taking some profits. But it's just not that high, even though it's run up pretty nicely. So I'd follow it with a stop. I would take profits. I would not let it collapse on me and hold it forever. It pays a 6.1% dividend. Remember, it is a REIT, so it's going to pay 90% of that $2.91 out to you in the form of a dividend. So if you bought a much, much lower, which you kind of indicated, almost half this, your dividend yield is even higher because that 6.1 is based on today's prices. GEO, everybody, GEO, GEO. 888-99-CHART. Okay, I just wanted to bring up that I got a prospectus and annual shareholders report from a mutual fund, and I'm not going to mention the mutual fund because I'm going to tell you some things that are not very positive about it. The fund itself is a good fund. I don't want you to misunderstand me that I'm saying that this fund stinks. That's not the case, actually. What is interesting is, first of all, you have to understand there's different share classes, A, B, C, R, institutional, and R6. Okay, that's six different kinds of share classes for the exact same fund. Looking at the annual shareholder report, it is on a five and a half by eight booklet with very, very thin paper, very fine print, 58 pages long. And it has the supplemental booklet, which is another, how many pages is the supplemental booklet? Which is another 10 pages long, same size. Now, I'm looking through the booklet because I like to read these every time. I don't read the whole thing. I'm thinking, where heck is the expense ratios? And in the main booklet, it talks about costs and kind of fees on page 38. If you're looking very carefully, there are share classes, A, B, C, and D. Oh, okay. They're telling you what they won't exceed the fees. 1.2% for this class, 1.96% for this class. These are all the expense ratios. But then over here on shares A, B, C, and R, there is an average daily net asset fees. There's all these fees. There's 12B1 fees. Oh, I see 12B1 fees over here. So I said, I still know what are the fees. So I found it's in booklet number 2. Okay, and the average fee is 1.25 on Class A, 2% on Class B, 2% on Class C, 1.44%. Okay, what I'm pointing out to you is that it's like reading, I don't know, the most complex manual, and this is just one fund there is, to try to figure out what are the costs. Because they also have A shares. B shares means that you had to pay 5.5% upfront commission, plus the annual of 1.25 on A shares. And then if you sell this fund within a year, you got to pay you still got to pay, if you have the B shares, 1% for 4 more years. So that's 5%. On and on and on about all the costs in this fund. And this is a good fund, everybody. Not a bad fund. But there's like 80 pages of fine print, very convoluted, that you're supposed to understand and read. And that's just one fund. What if you have 5 funds or 10 funds, 13 funds? No one ever's going to read that. No one ever reads any of that. No one does. Not if you're an average person. You don't. So it's pretty frustrating. I think they really got to simplify all this. Really do. So how long has it been since you've looked at your retirement portfolio with an objective eye? Is it suitable for today's market? Why not take advantage of a free review? I do retirement plans and look at your goals and your life situation. I do it all the time. Does your mix of stocks, bonds, and funds match up with today's reality, with your risk profile, how much risk you want to take? Remember, as you approach retirement, you should start to take less and less risk. Lots of questions that need answers, everybody. And I have new dates. I'll be in Northern California in March. I'll be in San Jose twice, the 15th and the 25th. The 15th and 25th. Or if you live out of the range of our California offices, I always can meet via phone or Skype. And if you want to reserve your time, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, then portfolio review.
Our free risk analysis tool not only evaluates and quantifies your risk tolerance, it's also the first step in determining if your current retirement portfolio, with its mix of stocks and funds and bonds and cash, is exposing you to too much risk or maybe not enough. It's easy to use and it's free. Just visit investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then look for free risk analysis.
888-99-CHART, InvestTalk Personal, maximizing your credit score. Now, achieving the best credit score, you can follow a few simple rules. It can save you thousands of dollars, too, next time you want to finance or refinance something. For example, a 30-year mortgage. Let's talk about a 30-year mortgage, $250,000, 30-year mortgage. If you have a FICO score between 620 and 640, which are fairly low, if you have that and you're refinancing or financing a 30-year mortgage, you're going to have to pay about, in today's market, about 5.5%. for that. If you had a FICO score of 760 instead of 620 and it's to 640, your interest rate is likely to be 4% instead of 5.5%. And I took these rates, by the way, back in late December. So, you know, they are a month, a couple of months left. Your monthly payment would be about $300 cheaper. And over the life, interest life of the loan, you're going to save about $80,000. That's 80,000, thousand, three zeros, thousands, over the life of a 30-year loan, borrowing $250,000. You're going to save $80,000 with a better high score. So here's roughly how FICO scores formula breaks down. You ever wanted to know how they figured what a FICO score? This is what they use. Payment history accounts about 35%, paying on time and all those things. Amounts owed about 30%. If you have too much debt, a big part of that, this category with too much debt, is a ratio of your credit card balances to your credit card limits and the ratio of your loan balances to the original principals. Are you paying down your loans? Are you maxing out your credit cards? You get, you know, that makes up 30%. So don't do that. You want to, you know, don't max them out. Then pay down your balances. Length of credit history counts for about 15%. New credit counts for about 10%, and this includes newly opened credit accounts as well as inquiries, hard inquiries they call them, which occur when you apply for credit. And here's something, here's one that may cause you to scratch your head. Credit mix. This score comes from the variety of credit accounts that you have. For example, if you have a mortgage, auto loan, student loan, and credit card, then that mix could boost your score more than having just one or two of these things. Okay, mind you, having the proper mix gives you a higher credit score than just having like one loan, mortgage loan, that's it. Isn't that odd? Make sure you don't open unnecessary accounts. Don't do that. Anyways, I have a link to this report on InvestTalk.com. It's right under the link to the main talking point. And that's InvestTalk Personal, everybody. Do you have a question about any of this? Check in now at 888-99-CHART.
Another information source to help you improve your investing skills and gain you some stress-relieving perspective is our KPP Premium Newsletter. It comes out each Friday. And one of the most popular features is our Stock Watch. At least a couple of companies are introduced to you to watch in each edition. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com today.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Eric from Southern Utah. I was listening to the program for yesterday, and you talked about hedging and said that perhaps hedging up to 25% of your portfolio is a good solution at this point or a good way to go. I'm certainly not hedged up that far, but I have done a little bit of selling calls against some of my positions. But I was wondering if I wanted to go further than that, if buying positions in SH or VXX for the VIX, if that would be a good way to go at this point. And if you like either one of those, which one do you like better, SH or VXX? Love the show. Look forward to hearing your responses to these questions. Thanks.
Okay, VSH, which is, by the way, that's the ProShares shorting the S&P 500. So the S&P 500 goes down, that position would go up. And hedging means still holding on to your long positions, but trying to protect them against it. You don't want to sell them, but you want to protect them against a down market, and you can use SH as a hedge against the down market, but still hold on to your longs. And it's a very difficult thing to do, so it's not for the average person. Do not use VIX, VXX, VXX, which is an ETF that tracks the VIX, the volatility index. Don't use VXX because it doesn't work. If you don't believe me, I would suggest that you look at a chart of the actual VIX, which is the dollar sign VIX, that's the symbol, dollar sign VIX, and you'll see that it's turned sideways and been sideways for, since December, where if you look at the VIX, VXX, which is supposed to track it, it's done nothing but going down since December. It's the way it's constructed, and I won't go into details, the VIX, VXX, the way it's constructed doesn't track the VIX. It doesn't. So don't try to use that as a hedge. Don't. SH you can, but not VXX. That would be my suggestion. The VXX is a trading vehicle, which is extreme, and it doesn't do like it's supposed to, because the way it is constructed, as I said. That's, I'll leave it at that. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. I do have a stock question on Delta, maybe we'll get to later. But how about a tax quiz? I have three questions for you. Tax quiz. Okay, first one is about a Roth. Is the money you put in a Roth IRA pre or after tax? 42% of the people asked this question got it right. That means 58% got it wrong. Is the money you put in a Roth IRA pre-tax or after tax? It's after tax. A regular IRA is pre-tax. Okay, a 529 is, one, a way to make tax-deductible contributions to college? No, it's not. Two, a college savings plan that earns tax-free? Yes, it is. Three, a plan that allows qualified users to defer taxes? No, it's not. It's only able to make money, earns money over time tax-free. That's it. That's what a 529 plan is. 42% got that right. That means 58 got it wrong. 90% got this right. Can married couples file separate tax returns? The answer is yes. May not be wise to do it, but the answer is yes. 90% got that right. Anyways, it just, there was on this quiz that I was reading, there was like 10 questions, and I picked out three just because we can't do all 10 on the radio. But I thought it was pretty kind of interesting. You're listening to Invest Talk, everybody. Reminder, you can use our free risk analysis tool anytime you want, anytime it's convenient for you. Just add, it takes about 3 minutes to answer a few questions. You'll learn a lot about yourself. And I'll respond to it. It comes right into my desk when you answer it, and I start giving you the information on what it means. And knowing your risk tolerance for risk is a foundation for successful strategy. It's there for you on InvestTalk.com.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Sean from New York. First of all, thank you for your wonderful podcast. I've been listening to it every day for the past 2 years, and I'm very happy. Thank you very much. First of all, you seem to know all of the trends in the market, ups and downs, and different PEs in different times. I was wondering if you know when a company comes out in IPO, normally the price initially goes up and then drops, or it goes down first and then goes up, or there's not a trend that you can follow and pin it. The reason I'm asking that is because I want to know when a company is coming out in IPO, is it smart to buy immediately or wait for a few weeks and then buy it, if you want to buy it? The second question was about ETF. When you buy a mutual fund, you know who is managing it, if it's Fidelity, the manager's name, you know everything. When it comes to ETFs, how can you find that information? If something goes wrong with an ETF, what are your legal options? That was just in comparing ETFs and mutual funds. Thank you very much. I will listen to the podcast. Bye.
Okay, let's talk about IPOs first. 80% of all IPOs, 80% going back in history, 6 months after they come out, they are trading at lower than the IPO price. 80% of them. One of the reasons is after 6 months, the insiders get to sell and realize profits. They can sell their shares that they've had and held on to. They get to start to sell. So I don't buy IPOs. I wait way past 6 months. I like to see a track record. I'm not keen on anybody buying IPOs, because if it's a really good IPO, you won't be able to buy it anyways, because it's offered to the institutional investors, not to you and me, not the little guys. ETFs. There are usually no managers in ETFs because most of them track indexes or subset index of some kind. At some point, I have a feeling there will be active ETFs that are managed and there will be managers. Most ETFs are sponsored by a big bank. And so the bank is who you go after. Something is really wrong. You sue the bank who sponsors the ETF that brought it out public. Okay, so that's how that works. Those are pretty not too difficult. Okay. Read three reasons you should skip the Snapchat IPO. One is you can't get it. Just like I told you, it's going to be offered to institutional investors. You're not going to get it at the IPO. You have to wait till after it starts trading. And it's probably going to be a lot higher than the IPO price because I think it'll be a successful IPO. A non-successful IPO is when it trades below the offering price right away. That's unsuccessful. Also, you shouldn't buy the Snapchat shares because those shares have no voting rights. None. They're offering those shares without voting rights. Number three reason, third reason. One, you can't get it. Two, you get no voting rights. And third is, I'm not so keen on the CEO. He's 26 years old. He's been having questionable behavior, and he'll say, oh, that was my college days. Well, that's only a couple, three, 4 years ago. I mean, really poor judgment on some of the emails and some of the things that he... I'm not so keen on a 26-year-old running a big multi-billion dollar company called Snapchat when it comes out. Yeah, it's very often that the founders of these companies are poor managers of the companies when they get to a certain, when they get big and when they go IPO. Because they don't know how. They know how to develop the software. Great. Genius invention. Okay, great. Wonderful. But to manage a multi-billion dollar, multi-country level company? International company? How much do they know about tax laws? How much do they know about the sales change? What they know about their software. So I'm not keen. I would not trust the 26-year-old being the CEO here. Would not. Another reason why I'd like IPOs to get mature, to find out, you know, especially on the tech side, to see how these young people manage their big companies. Now, it doesn't mean that they're always unsuccessful, because that's not true. But, you know, need a lot of hand-holding. Okay, I got an email today. I was wondering, the question is from Ken. I was wondering if you bring up Delta Airlines. It came out recently with Berkshire Hathaway increasing his position. However, it's up 45% in the last 5 months. I like to follow, I don't go into that. Delta Airlines, symbol DAL, provides flights. We all know that. It's still fairly cheap, even though it's bumping up against its 52-week high, 51. The PE is only 10. I'm not keen on airlines, even though I did buy them when they were really deeply discounted. I sold one and still have another. So I kind of like Delta. It's got to break above this $52 range before you should be a buyer. You want to make a new 52-week high. Our time is up for the hour. If you'd like to contact me directly with personal message, just click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. On behalf of Justin Klein and everyone at KPP, thanks for being with us today. And let's do it again tomorrow. Enjoy your day off. Enjoy the evening, everybody.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.